Hey, what's up, everyone? How you doing? Ben Kissel here, hanging out with Henry Zabrowski.
Yes.
Thank you all so much for giving to our Patreon. Without you, we don't exist. We're nothing. We're nothing without you. So thank you all so much. Today, we are honored to have a few guests. They have been on the show before. We are massive fans of their work. They are just releasing season two of Hell Year on Amazon Prime. So make sure you go out there and check that out. We are with Dana and Greg Newkirk. Thank you all so much for being on the show.
Dude, thank you for having us.
Thank you.
So before Henry gets into his hyper intense, I'm not going to call it like aggressive nerd talk.
Let me ask you my questions. You will answer each one of them.
But before we get to that, what can the audience expect from Hell Year Season 2? Does it pick up where Hell Year Season 1 left off? What's new for the audience? What should they be looking forward to?
Well, first off, it's twice the size of the first season. I know a lot of people had a lot of questions after the first season. The second season picks up about 8 months after the first season ends and solves a lot of questions that were lingering, but also adds a lot more and sees us really go all over the East Coast, mm-hmm. in the South in search of Indrid Cold, in search of people like Alan Greenfield, who was a big player in the first season that nobody ever met. And it just gets even weirder and crazier. And there's a lot more, I guess, quote unquote, action in the second season.
More, there's lots of swearing and me looking very scared and
Dana being mad at all the men.
Me being very mad. But we do answer a lot of the questions that were left behind in season
one. More witchcraft too.
And more witchcraft,
more action. That sounds perfect. I'm happy you guys finally have Michael Bay producing. Hopefully there can be some big explosions towards the end.
It's hard to explode stuff without permits, right? Dude, but you did it anyway.
It is. We usually try and stick to exploding mines because you don't need a permit for that.
Fucking all you need is fucking chief, dude. And you get fucking. Yeah.
I am not gonna lie to say that there were not moments where I was on some edibles watching season two where I definitely did the cool. Like I did that a couple times, and I feel like I know that is a good response. That's technically what you're looking for.
Dude, I feel like watching it high is probably one of the best ways to watch Hell Year.
Probably.
Frankly.
Absolutely.
Okay, so let's start. Let's start this. Number one, how are you responding to so many people? Because I'm going to say right now, before you even begin, try to watch Hell Year and then listen to this interview because I don't want to ask all the Pat. Like I want to ask some probing questions. So there might be some spoilers in here. So just know that before we begin, try to watch as much as you can of Hell Year Season 2 so I can ask this.
Nothing more comfortable than when a man that looks like Henry wants to ask probing questions.
Probing.
So you are already dealing with the end of this. The main question will be, are there goblins? Where are these goblins? People want to see the goblins, and they won't take anything less for an answer. And you get a lot of that. You get a lot of pressure from people that want this, and then you get a lot of people that then say, "Where are my fucking goblins?" But they don't understand that it's on the inside. How do you express what's happening within the intimate world of your paranormal search? That shows, like, it's not that we don't need goblins, but goblins are kind of, they're there, but they're not there.
Okay, so this is your Jerry Maguire show me the goblins.
Where are my goblins? Which where is the goblins? I think a lot of people are screaming this, unfortunately.
The cry for goblins had reached a fever pitch to the point where my rap present for the guys on season two was a shirt of one of our Amazon reviews. That was one star, and it just said no goblins.
Well, people wanted the goblins.
We backed ourselves into a corner because there's a goblin on the cover of season one. The story starts with goblins, a guy who's seen goblins. And trust me, no one wants to see goblins more than we want to see them. Right. But I think people's expectations are a little high if – They really truly expect us to walk out of a cave with a dead goblin and it be real.
I think at the same time too, I think what people also need to understand is it's not that we're saying that that isn't actually something that's exists out there. Yeah. We just haven't necessarily come across one yet. So we're very much open to the idea of having that experience. Mm-hmm. It just hasn't necessarily happened in the way that we thought that the experience would happen. So it's like, come with us. Just trust us and come with us.
You know, and we talk about this sometimes when it comes to paranormal situations. Sometimes they'll fake it till they make it. You know, we've talked about that with a few of the hauntings that we've covered on last podcast on the left. Did you guys ever think, oh, let's just go get like an old ass doll, paint it, whatever.
Make well, you it know, a goblin. I already play a demon on Adult Swim. Like,
yeah, get
I
Henry
dress as a goblin and show up. Mean like, where are the women?
No, listen. We actually when season one, we had shot season one in like 2017, and then it didn't come out until 2019. And the reason was we were actually talking to different networks and different production companies who were very, very interested in the story. But it came with the caveat, which was you got to find goblins.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And the sort of like wink, 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 nudge, nudge there was you will find them no matter what.
Yeah, we will make sure that you find them.
And we just weren't comfortable with that because, I mean, we have pretty well-established careers in the community and we don't really want to throw that away for, you know, a one-seasoner TV show about, you know, if you actually find goblins, it kind of ruins it.
And I think also, I think the thing to remember is that what we're experiencing, at least from my perspective, is almost weirder. Like, it's just as weird as like stumbling across goblins. It's weird. It's equally as weird. And I think people need to just give that a chance and kind of experience, allow themselves to experience it.
I think, you know, we it's never really crossed our minds to ever be like, oh, well, here's a quick glimpse of a tiny, you know, goblin in the cornfield as the camera swoops by, that type of thing. It's never really dawned on us.
It's like, there's a goblin, or what a goblin might have looked like. Like, you just get, you put the little caveats in there. Yeah.
And I mean, I think if we had thought about doing that, our season one finale wouldn't have been finding a tin can. Mm-hmm.
But it ended up paying off in season two. Honestly, it was very, very fun. And I think the kite scenario, which I'm going to let play out, people need to see in real time so they can actually feel the wooey woo of that entire situation. How do you educate an audience? Because we talk about this on the show all the time about how these kind of weirdly psychedelic / paranormal experiences, I think, are very personal. And I think what you guys did very well was show that it's like a conversation between you and the universe when you decided to step into one of these full-on and paranormal investigation where your hearts are just kind of open and you're like, fucking show me the goblins. You're asking the Jerry Maguire question yourself, being like, where are these goblins at? And all of a sudden you're in this twisty world. How do you tell an audience, being like, you all don't know what we're going through as we go through this search?
Well, I think we're always trying to remind people that paranormal phenomena, paranormal experiences are very subjective, and you have to study them as if they're subjective. You can't really ask for any super hard evidence, or you will, if it's true, you're probably going to walk away disappointed. Like, that just doesn't really happen. And so to experience it, you have to subject yourself to the experience, and you have to really engage that experience as a person. And I think what Hellier does really well, and what our director and editor, Carl, has really captured, are our emotions going through it, because we all approach it a different way. And I think that's what people enjoy watching. Like, the high strangeness is great, but people also enjoy seeing how we are dealing with those situations in the moment.
Yeah, I think from Carl's perspective, one of the things that he wanted to include as much as possible was all of our dead ends, because that gets a majority of the time. That's the stuff that really gets cut out of most paranormal TV. But we thought being really honest and open about those moments where you do feel insanely frustrated because you're not getting anywhere, you don't feel like you're getting anywhere, I think by showing those things, we're bringing people along with us throughout the investigation. And I think it just makes it feel very real. And we wanted it to feel that way. We didn't want it to feel, you know, that it had been produced in any way. Mm-hmm. We just wanted people to feel like they were coming along on this investigation, whether it was incredibly amazing or really frustrating. We were just sort of like open to letting them experience all of it with us.
Would you compromise? Okay, we don't have to see goblins, but can we see Goblin Dookie? Can we get it to the? Can you do?
You
want to
see scat?
Like, I
want
to see.
You want to see
because
scat.
That is my favorite part of all shows when they just like, no, that's the Dookie.
Right here, you can see the cryptid walk through here because of the size and the fibrous nature of its scat.
They're always talking scat.
They're very into it. They know a lot about it. So maybe that's a good compromise.
We could, well, one of the weird things about alien cases is a lot of people who believe that they leave like a slime behind them. And it's funny, we have one of those ultraviolet lights that you're supposed to be able to see like the goblin slime and the alien slime.
Cool.
There's a dude out of Texas who does stuff with alien implants, and he always finds the goblin slime. but it's always in like a dirty hotel.
Uh-oh.
I've seen some of that goblin slime in my past.
We could see that in the hotels we stay at in Hellier.
Yes, I'm certain you could.
But you need to sleep at night. You don't need to have the black light. No.
There's actually Dana has a standing rule that the ultraviolet light does not come out while we're in the hotels.
I don't want to know.
No, you don't. You really don't, because it takes a community to make a goblin sometimes. Sometimes you're made a goblin by your family and you didn't know. Number one, how are you getting all this weird ass tech? Where are you renting, or are you getting this stuff built for? Because you had the God helmet this time, which was very, very interesting. How are you putting together these very specific paranormal experiments, and who's giving you this hardware? If you don't mind, you also don't have the bus sources.
It's really simple. We ask for it. Like most ghost hunters are usually sticking to the stuff that they can buy in the over the counter type stuff. But we're literally reaching out to people who are building this technology. People like Todd Murphy, who built, it's the only home version of the God helmet. There's a lot of them, a lot of people out there who are saying they have them, but they don't, because what makes the God helmet work are really very patented chirp signals from Laurentian University. Hmm. And we just asked him, and he's like, I'll put one together. This is what it costs, and then I'll send it to you. And then he taught us how to use it, and that's that.
That's awesome.
That's great. I didn't know you could actually commission those.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, these people want their technology used in a lot of cases, and if they are. And the thing is, like, this one in particular, the God helmet that Todd Murphy has created, it's misrepresented on television all the time. They, like, people use it and say they're getting sick and they throw up, or they've used it and said, like, oh, it's mind control. It's part of this mind control program from Montauk. And none of that stuff's true. And they get really mad about that. So seeing it used properly makes them want to help you.
Interesting. Again, we're talking to Greg and Dana Newkirk. Check out season 2 of Hellier.
Dana, you put it on. Now, when you say that you had this feeling, because this is very deep. If you've watched Hellier season 2, there is a very intense scene with a God helmet. Can you explain what the hell it does and how did it feel?
Yeah.
So I can explain how it feels. Greg can probably explain how it works a little bit better than I can. But for me, the way that the helmet affects me is it when I'm using it, I will get a lot of visual imagery. I'll get a lot of sounds. I'll kind of tap into what I like to think is like a higher state of mind. So maybe a psychic ability.
Is it the same as like psychedelics? Like, is it the same where you are? How do you put this? Like, when I have seen visuals and psychedelics, it's like I'm also completing a picture willfully. And is it like that, or are you seeing shit?
It's not quite as intense as psychedelics, but there's very much an element of that where you can tell. I think once you do it enough times, and once you've had the God helmet sessions done enough times, you get used to the experience, and you just sort of trust yourself through the process. So when my mind is visually creating things in front of me, instead of just stopping and thinking, well, it's probably my brain, it's putting things together, I just trust it and I go with it and I just let it happen. And so there is, I think, an element of the experience that it does really truly feel like a psychedelic experience. And what I usually walk away with is either in the moment, some type of a piece of information that may at some point in the future make sense to the investigation, or within the 3 days that follow, the God helmet is kind of, once you've done the actual session, after 3 days, it's at its peak. So around that third day, there's a lot of very weird senses that you kind of pick up on. I've had lots of physical sensations, a lot of really bizarre dreams. And those are just, I just journal all of it and keep track of all of it. So that, again, at some point in time, it might be, some tiny piece of information might be something that, you know, completely breaks the case open. Right. And also is really interesting because it's something that I've, you know, pulled out of the ether from by using, you know, the God helmet itself.
Yeah. And this is really toward, it's like kind of a mediumship tool, right? Like the idea is that it's you are actively attempting to communicate with an intelligence, and this is some other form of receiver that is helping, right? Like that's how it fits in the context of a paranormal investigation.
So the idea behind the God helmet is it was created to simulate spiritual experiences that people have in places of like religious significance. And a lot of those places, researchers have found there are really high electromagnetic fluctuations. And they've noticed that places where people see UFO sightings quite a bit, places that are holy places, they have these really strong electromagnetic fields that are affecting the brain. And so their original thought was like, okay, maybe these things are hallucinations. Let's see if we can create this in a lab. Mm-hmm. So the big guy who's known for it is Dr. Michael Persinger, and he passed a couple years ago. But he started to notice that people who are using the God helmet were starting to get almost like psychic experiences. So he started bringing in psychics like remote viewers like Ingo Swann, and their hits were way, way up when they were using the helmet. And so he proposes that there's some sort of resonance field that surrounds the world that humans are all tapped into, which is why we can get psychic experiences, which is why we get visitation from recently passed loved ones. If people want more information, a really fantastic thing they can find is there's a lecture that Persinger gave at Laurentian University called No More Secrets. And it's about this idea of a world where we fully tapped into this ability. But that's sort of what the God helmet's meant to do, is to tap into that resonance field and almost like a help you, you know, lube up the information a little bit more so it flows a little bit better. And that's sort of what happens. Yeah, exactly.
That's great. It's highly, highly interesting. And I do believe it, but I don't necessarily want people peeking inside of my brain all the time.
Well, you do a good job of letting people inside. I feel like we know your mind fairly well, for better or for worse.
Is fairly lubed.
Yes. So, you know, you mentioned, it seems to me, and I'm just going to say, it seems like it's the journey, not the destination. And yeah, yes, sure. I got that off of a series of different motivational posters. But have you ever, how do you know that you found something significant if you don't really have like the outcome already sort of like, if you don't have an end goal? Like, have you found that after a day or a few days of doing research, that something that you completely thought was innocuous and pointless and worthless all of a sudden becomes like one of the most important things that you guys have, you know, found or discovered?
Oh, that's happened a bunch of times. Mm-hmm. I mean, you see a lot of that in season two, where there's things that were dead ends in season one that come back around. And that's the tough part about making a project like this. When we started the project, I even told Carl, I was like, man, I really don't know if this should be the first thing we do, because I don't even have an idea of where this is going to end.
Right.
And he just felt so strongly compelled to make it. I was like, all right, well, let's go. And so I think, you know, our destination is, we want to know what's actually happening in these cases. Like, why did this come to us to begin with? Are there actually goblins? And then through that, we're learning more about the phenomena itself. We're learning about how this stuff manifests, where it manifests, you know, the ideas of, you know, marginality and liminality and things like that. And so when we start to see things that connect, and there's these crazy connections to things that probably shouldn't be connected, we know that that's important. And there's times where we have a feeling and we gut check it.
It almost feels a little bit like taking a peek at a blueprint. And what you're looking at is a bit of an outline of how the phenomena works or why it works the way that it does. And you're right. It's really just a gut check a lot of the time. If it feels as if it's in that current, if it's a part of it, there's a feeling to it almost. Yeah.
And a lot of stuff is left into the series on purpose, knowing that we might not get an answer to it. But if we do, it might be somebody who watches that figures it out. Like a lot of our leads, Episode 6 of season 2 is basically, it catches up to where we were concurrently after the release of season 1. Like, you actually see people start to send us their leads. And we use those, and we meet people who have pieces of this case solely because we released it the way that we did.
I really like that it can, all of the work continued. It was like season 1 came out and you guys were still working and figuring out all the stuff. I like catching up to where you guys were in season 2. I thought that was a lot of fun. Do you wonder if there's a, in my mind, I wonder if we are suffering from, in our world in general, and this is coming from a highly paranoid human being, that there's a lack of trust in ourselves and in the universe as a whole. And I think that these processes, these journeys, require a lot of trust. And I think a lot of people take, they say, I say the word trust and they make it sound, they say gullible. They say you're a fool for expressing your imagination or following your imagination as if your imagination holds nothing useful for you. And I think partially it's got to do with our school system. Literally, I think it has to do with the way we are, they view arts and the way they view things, and that these trips of imagination or trust, these things are useless because there is no vat of goblin slime at the end of this that we're not making ourselves.
Yeah, no, absolutely. That's a really fantastic point, and that's something that we're always struggling with when we're doing something like Hellier, is we're always thinking about how it's being perceived by the people that are watching it, because we do purposefully try and let ourselves be a little more open than we might normally be. But it's like that old saying, you know, remain open-minded, but not so open-minded that your brain falls out, and that's really kind of the thing, because what we start to notice is, One of our mottos is one foot in, one foot out, and we always try and straddle that line. But it's when you start getting people who are 2 feet in, those are the people who are like shooting up pizza joints because of Pizzagate and like harassing Sandy Hook families and stuff like that. The people who are 2 feet out are the people who are just absolute cynics, and they'll never have a magical experience in their entire lives. And so I think it's important that we show one foot in, one foot out. Mm-hmm. And I think we all sort of balance along that line sometimes. Sometimes we're both feet in, sometimes we're both feet out. But
I think we've also gotten much better at being one foot in, one foot out. Yes. Especially, I think, in season 2, because the first season is very, you know, I think it's easier for maybe Greg and I, but I know for Connor and Carl, who it can be difficult for them to kind of be open to having those types of experiences. And in season 2, I think you really see, you know, Connor specifically kind of just let himself have an experience, just trusting the process. And I think that we've gotten much better at that. But I think, like you said, I think that's important that you do have one foot in, one foot out.
And again, it's that subjective thing. Like, the paranormal is subjective. So if you don't allow it to happen to yourself, you're never going to experience it.
Right.
It's like love.
It's true, love. Though. You got to let it. That's actually a really good way to put it.
So, did you guys ever make love in the Cape?
Do not, Henry. That Why is not a question.
We're not going to stern this.
You want to ask that question?
There.
But here's the thing.
Oh my goodness! Bring out the black
that,
light.
The way that season 2 ends, we may end up having to do that.
Yay!
Oh my god! Well, now I've got it. I'll watch
sex
that
sex magic ritual.
Yay! That's what I'm talking about. Yeah, guys, hell yeah! That's gonna add to your. That's gonna add, I think, years to your marriage. I think it's important. You have to explore some of these things. But is Connor just gonna watch or?
Well, that, what do you think Carl's for?
Oh my goodness! Well, there's gonna be a lot of fun happening in those caves. That's for sure. How do you prevent yourself from getting both feet in? Because it seems to me like people start off slow, like, you know, like you're talking about with Pizzagate and all this nonsense. Just starts with a YouTube video, and the next thing you know, a year later, you're like, who is my dad? He has changed. So have you guys found yourself like over your heads to the point where you had to look in the mirror and just be like, we need to go to Pizza Hut and eat pizza backwards and just be like, this is cool.
This is fun. This is weird.
This is weird.
This is satisfying.
This is satisfying.
That is, yes.
Constantly.
Constantly. And I think the nice thing about having, you know, 4 or 5 people is usually one of us is on the edge and it requires everybody else to kind of pull them back. And I think we all kind of experience that in different ways throughout the investigation. And I think had we not had so many different types of people and as many people as we do have, we probably, I mean, we've said it, you know, before, but each one of us quit separately at different points throughout this, specifically throughout the second season. We've all quit and walked away, and it, you know, to have the rest of the group kind of pull you back and bring you back to reality is always really nice. And I know a lot of people don't necessarily have that.
No.
Well, Marcus and I quit Chaos Magic because of what it was doing to our lives. Like, there was a point in time where the rituals were fucking up our day-to-day so hard.
Because you were
that
eating your own cum instead
I never, of... I never ate it.
He had just ingested it.
It's just a thing. It's just what you realize that how many elements you're letting in. This is a question I think would also work with you, Dana, and also wondering, now that season two dips its toe truly into the ritual magic world, number one, how do you protect yourself? Number two, you know, you meet Alan Greenfield. And, you know, in my mind, because I also read Secret, was it The Secret of the UFO Knots? Cipher
of the UFO Knots, yeah.
We read that for our Men in Black series. And I remember reading that. And when I thought, like, when I meet this guy, he's going to have, like, a fucking cloak. He's going to have, you know, all the shit. And then a man that looks... The man who looks like me on a cruise rolls in on my retirement cruise. He's got a Hawaiian shirt on and he's like super excited. But like, what do you do in this world of ritual magic? But Dana, you're a real practitioner and you try to also bring it home. Like, I'm just asking questions about, like, it's more like, please talk about this brooch of this world and how does it affect your studies and how do you teach other people to be normal about ritual magic?
It's funny because with Greenfield, I feel like now that he's such a trickster that is exactly how he should have shown up. He subverted all of our expectations and he just is the ultimate trickster in that moment. It's so perfect. But I think that it's so hard because I think it's a matter of I constantly talk about from my personal experience throughout the investigation is it being a current of something. It's maybe it's the current of the phenomena or it's the current of magic that exists around it. But I allow myself to kind of tap into that. And that's where I feel that the magic kind of exists. So if it feels as if it's a part of that current and if it makes sense and it flows with it, then I'm like, yes, I feel very comfortable doing this. I feel as if it's going to benefit the investigation. If it feels off or it feels like it's kind of bumping up against it, doesn't feel right, then usually I'll kind of back away. And so the thing for me, it's been very difficult this last season because I'm not a ceremonial magician. I'm pagan. Most of my magic involves working with nature and the cycles of nature.
But your Instagram does a really good, I mean, I'm not to just plug your Instagram, but literally you do a very good job of like breaking down these kind of thoughts and not rituals, but ways people can practice and enter it in their daily life, which I think is really cool. And I think it's good for people to see.
I think it's just a matter of grounding it as much as you possibly can and explaining it to people in ways that I wanted to have someone explain it to me when I was first learning magic. So it's really, for me, it's just breaking it down. And like the thing is, you know, Carl Connor and Tyler and Greg to a degree, they're all at this point pretty comfortable working with magic and in that space. But in the beginning, it was me having to really explain a lot of this. And, you know, from Connor's perspective, as he's Catholic, he's very devout Catholic.
Well, you should know that it's all fucking blood magic if he's a Catholic. I mean, I was one too. It turns you into a Satanist.
Yeah. I had to explain a lot of what we were doing, what we were experiencing to him in ways that didn't freak him out. And, you know, I think a lot of it just has to do with grounding as much as you possibly can.
When we did the ritual, the pan evocation at the end, he was very, very uncomfortable with it. Connor, just imagine that we're just contacting upper management. That's what we're doing. And when I put it that way, he was like, okay, I get it. We're contacting upper management of the phenomena.
But Greg, how are you dealing with this shit? So now, like, you're new. Is this the first time you've met a full ceremonial, like, capital M magician?
No, I mean, I've run in weird circles for a while, but I think the thing with Greenfield is I've never met one who's so serious about it and who had like made such a lifelong career of it. And so I had had him built up in my head, you know, like you said, is this guy who's going to have a totally black suit on and like a...
yes, the creatures of the night, music they make, like that, one of these guys, yeah.
And so meeting him, immediately I was disarmed because he's wearing a Hawaiian shirt and is incredibly goofy and actually very funny.
And that's exactly what he probably wanted.
Oh, for sure. And you know, we sat down with him. The interview with him, no joke, was like maybe 5-6 hours. And people only saw part of it. And I mean, most of it was him just talking trash about the OTO, which was hilarious. Looking dead in the camera, looking right into the camera and like sending messages to the OTO. Obviously,
there's so much feuding in this world. Every one of these, when you pop the fucking lid off of Ceremonial Magic or the ufology world, all this kind of stuff, it's just people fighting.
It's just pure drama.
But I think that's what happens when people start to have really, really strong beliefs about a bunch of stuff. They all choose their own faction. Mm-hmm. And that's something we try very hard not to do, which is part of that one foot in, one foot out thing. And so it's easy for us. Like, I don't believe any of the same stuff I believed 5 years ago. And I think that's healthy, is for you to be able to update and change your opinions based on the information given to you. Mm-hmm. But if you get angry at these people and you start to fight with these people, you become more ingrained in your thought processes. Right. So it's weird to try and be that open to meet as many of these people, whether you're talking to somebody who's a ritual ceremonial magician or someone who's been abducted by aliens or whatever, and try to take what they're saying at face value. And then have a new worldview built around that, the parts that you can take. But that's sort of what Hellier's about. And I hope what it's doing is it's making people be a little more open-minded or maybe be a little more magically minded, not gullible. You know, we always joke about how Hellier's really a show about reading books.
It really is.
But this podcast is a lot about that too.
Yep. This is why we have always been so successful when pitching a show. We say, it's a show about reading books. And then they're like, oh my God, the money, I can see it.
Wait a second, 1-6-7, you're a goblin? I'm like, yes, that's what my wife calls me.
Well, it seems like Greenfield's a real wabbo. If we had to say if he's a Cabo or a wabbo.
He is a wabbo.
He's a wabbo. He has
that has
a
become
time.
A new distinction on last podcast on the left, thanks to the Heaven's Gate series.
So because you guys don't necessarily have a destination in mind, do you find that that helps you be a little bit more fluid and flexible when it comes to you know, your ideologies and your beliefs? Do you feel like that really helps it, as opposed to these people? I think they must have some preconceived notion of why they're doing something, and in that, ironically enough, despite what they're doing, it being a little bit strange, but ironically, they actually make it so structured and it almost becomes kind of conservative, for lack of a better word.
For sure.
Yeah, I think that's actually part of the investigation, really, is never kind of putting ourselves in a spot where we are using or speaking in absolutes. We're kind of allowing ourselves to live in a liminal space as much as possible, because I think that's how the phenomena, I don't know, I feel as if it's part
that's
of
it
how
lives.
It lives. Yeah,
it lives in liminal and marginalized places. Mm-hmm. And so I think we've learned, even with people who are like, it's funny, there's a lot of people who believe that even though we're not finding goblins, it's all made up. Yeah. And it used to really bother us because it's a really personal case to all of us.
Yes.
But now we're at the point where we realize that's actually kind of great for manifesting the phenomena, to exist in that in-between space between, you know, where some people think it's real and some people don't. Mm-hmm. That's where that phenomena lives. And so we've learned to be better about that. And what people are seeing in Hellier is they're seeing us learn stuff like that. They're learning it along with us. And people literally, I say it once in a while, but they literally watch me become pagan in Hellier. That's exactly what happens.
It's very intense. They're watching you become into a whole new frame of mind. But I think a part of it is that the people that kind of have some pushback towards it, I think, are seeing that and they don't want to slide. Either they don't want to slide because I'm already dealing with all of this shit. I can't put together a winter solstice table right now. I don't got the time. Michael's is across the city, you know, that kind of
thing. Yeah, and it's hard.
I don't think you you need to, though. And I think that's one of the things that we're trying to show people is that just embracing the phenomena, embracing this idea. You know, one of the things, the themes of season two is new rituals.
Yeah.
And the idea of not revisiting stuff that other people have put together in whatever rigid structure they have, but coming up with something new, a new way to commune with whatever this thing is.
Because, I mean, really, at the end of the day, what this investigation is it is a ritual. And, you know, it might not be what we, you know, normally would think of as a ritual because we have all of these ideas that, you know, of how you do certain things. But really, at the end of the day, I feel like the investigation itself is a ritual.
The series is a ritual.
It's a ritual. Yeah, exactly.
That everyone who watches takes part in.
Now, has it taken over your entire lives? Because I know that you guys covered a lot of shit with Weird HQ. Like, you guys used to, I'm not used to, I know you're still obviously touring with the Paranormal Museum and doing talks and doing lectures, but now that this hellier is just kind of sitting in your living room, what the hell do you do with it? What do you do from now on? Like, are you still in the same rolling investigation that you were in season two? Now, like, how do you draw those lines? How do you keep one foot in, one foot out, as you were saying?
Hellier's basically ruined our lives.
Good. That's what you want.
Season two in particular, I don't know what the difference was between one and two, but two blew up in such a way when it came out. Like, my inboxes, like, they're just absolutely destroyed. All of us have just been so inundated with all ends of the spectrum.
Oh, yeah.
And, I don't think we have a choice at this point. Like, it is ongoing, and we are like, we got our first massive lead for a third season when and if that happens 5 hours after the season premiered.
That's
Jesus
awesome.
Christ. Just immediately.
It's like hitting checkpoints. It's like whatever this thing is out there, we did the thing it needed, and now it's like, great, here's the next thing. And it's frustrating because I have other shit I want to do.
Good luck.
Like, you know what I mean? I can't live this life.
It does seem like, you know, it does. You guys, this is actually the sweetest spot. You guys are in a great spot because this could go on forever, both for better or for worse. But it's nice.
That's what you're asking for in show business. You're just talking about like a sure job, Kissel.
Yes.
Is what you're talking
No, that's
about.
What I'm saying. I know Greg looked extremely pained when I said this could go on forever. But well, it really could, right?
It'd be great if we were on the network. And we weren't self-producing it and making no money. But the way that we chose to make it, it really is a labor of love, and it's starting to become a labor of hate.
Just deeply, spitefully forced to be investigating these goblins. But, you know, who knows where the hell it's going to take you? But you know what I would say to that is that have you all right, we're going to work on another project. All right, let's go. We're doing another project. We're doing something else. We're going to follow another lead. Do you have those like lined up? Are you trying to pull away from Hellier and see what happens?
We've got half a dozen projects in the works. Like, we've got a documentary that'll probably come out sometime this year, totally different subject. And so we are making other stuff, and we are experimenting with new things too. I think Hellier's just going to be that weird thing that exists somewhere in the back of our minds that we have to revisit when we're forced to.
Yeah. And, I think we've gotten really good at letting it happen as it's supposed to happen. So I think because season one and season two came out so close together, we had filmed season one in 2017. So there was a big gap between filming the first season to the second season. And we're just sort of letting it happen as it happens. We're not pushing anything. We're just going with it and allowing it to kind of unfold the way that it unfolds. And I feel like that is a little bit more mentally healthy for everybody involved, considering it can get crazy.
Well, you have got to come back on when your new project comes out, whatever that project entails.
Absolutely.
Is it about water parks or anything like that? Like the world's craziest water parks?
It's not a Kissel-centric topic. Is he going to be like, this is about different types of pizza and regional pizzas?
It's about a cursed object that was stolen from the Catskill Mountains. And
yes.
Cool.
Well, you guys do the same thing, right? Don't you have like a cursed object museum in your home?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, it's not exclusively, like, those things are a little hard to come by. So it's more of like we have some objects that are haunted or come from different investigations or whatever. But we also have objects that are significant to paranormal and ufology history and all kinds of stuff.
With the traveling museum, do you literally bring these things out? Like, you bring these out so people can see. So you travel with this stuff.
Yeah. So with our museum, the things that we travel with they're safe to travel with. We wouldn't ever bring anything that would be, you know, necessarily, you know, bad for the general public. But this object specifically that we're talking about was an object that we did travel with for a long time. And we finally had to come to a conclusion.
People where started to have like seizures.
It was
and
horrible.
Stuff
it was
you gave us coronavirus, didn't you? I knew it.
But yeah, she was the first object that we actually had to return. And yeah. So really? we always try to, again, one foot in, one foot out. So when people give us things, we try to research them from, you know, as logical a perspective as we can. But this was just one object that there was nothing that we could do to stop all of the activity that was happening around it. So it was, again, the first object.
Yeah, I mean, how would you do that? Do you put it in the washer and dryer? How the hell do you get an object uncursed?
Well, because there's so many people who have heard about, especially the Warrens. Right. Everybody's heard about Annabelle and all of that horseshit. But I wonder what it is. I don't think it's necessarily horseshit, but I don't know how they just put it in a glass box and they say, don't open this box. And I guess you can do that.
You can, but I don't think that's actually helpful. And so one of the things that we always do with the museum, our museum's very much, it has a Trojan horse approach, because we go to these events and people have seen things like the Conjuring films or read books by Ed and Lorraine or seen whatever TV shows. And so they think, well, haunted objects are scary. This doll wants to murder me. Mm-hmm. And by the time they leave, they have a different perspective on it, which we're always trying to push, which is, you know, curiosity over fear. Because if you are afraid of things, you're not going to learn anything about them. Right. So even when things get really scary with some of the pieces, which doesn't happen often, I mean, again, I can't stress how rare that stuff really is. But when something really scary does end up happening, we try and push past that and wonder what's the root of the issue. Like, if something is just trying to communicate, maybe it's the only way they can. And so at the end of the day, I think the message behind a lot of the stuff we do at the museum is, if you can learn to not be afraid of a ghost, you can learn to not be afraid of your neighbor.
I'm much scarier a lot of times. They're the ones that are really killing people.
Well, that's the thing. Ghosts can't hold guns. They don't have the ability to do that. So,
well, that's a good point.
And we roll back all the landmine stuff. So we're about to see a lot of that more, too. I'm really kind of vaguely excited for the landmine uptick.
The landmine? You want? What is going on with you, Henry?
It's a whole thing. I know that we're supposed to be allowing more landmines. That's why we're pulling it back. They are the restriction on landmines. So now everybody can have one.
Great. I'm just going to say that. Hellier Season 2. Check it out. Amazon Prime. Greg and Dana Newkirk, thank you so much for being with us today. Is there anything else that we want to share with our audience before we go?
I definitely want to ask another, because we have a very curious audience, and everybody, I know a lot of people that are into this topic want to know, like, how do you start putting together your own either paranormal investigation kit? How do people that are curious about doing this type of work, what do they do? Like, how do you start? What's a good way to, what's an intro? Like, what's a good book to read? Because I know I love John Keel, but John Keel just seemed like a man who's just constantly going, what's that? Oh, what is that?
I know what I saw.
It's the truth. Definitely read a lot, and don't read the stuff that's traditional, because if you read a lot of the traditional stuff, you're just going to retread the steps of everybody else. There's a really fantastic book that I would highly recommend. It's by George P. Hansen. It's called The Trickster and the Paranormal, and it's about that idea of liminality and marginality and how the paranormal interacts with it. So I would, in particular, read things like that. And then I would also try and read stuff that's maybe outside of your comfort zone. So read stuff about cryptozoology, read stuff about ufology, and read stuff about psychology in particular. That stuff is especially stuff by like Jung. That stuff is really important, and it becomes super important to the stuff that we do. Because if you start to understand how the human mind works, you can start to understand how the paranormal interacts with the human mind, which is where I think it's all coming from anyway.
I think also probably one of the most important things to do is actually get out and investigate stuff. Because I think more often than not, we talk to people who really want to be doing some kind of paranormal investigation, but they, you know, they never actually end up going out and tracking down local legends in their, you know, in their city, or going and actually investigating. And I think that the act of engaging with the phenomena is one of the most important aspects of the entire experience. You have to get out and actually engage with it. And a lot of people don't really like doing that. So that would be probably the number one thing that I would say to do.
I think it That's sounds very super cool. fun. Yeah.
Honestly, you guys are, I think it's very inspiring. I think this is, it helps people to see that this is what a real paranormal investigation looks like. I think it's very important for people to try to absorb the subtleties, because for some reason, somebody like me doesn't sell the subtleties.
No.
Super well.
You don't strike me as a subtle guy.
Unfortunately.
Where are the goblins? I would be a goblin.
Where are the goddamn goblins? Show yourself, goblin! Like, that's just me in a game.
It's not working, Henry.
No,
you're just
but
yelling
I
at an
would,
old woman.
Give it I another year, and you'll see that on television. I promise you.
You better be careful with these guys coming in, like, sucking up your ideas, because there's a couple of good stuff in that documentary. Because I'm going to say this, maybe it's a co-pro type thing between all of us. The concept of a guy in Vietnam seeing the little goblins in the fucking tunnels, I was like, that's a fucking movie.
It is.
That is a fun as hell movie. Don't you grin and shake your head at me.
No, I'm saying, if you're in Vietnam, you're just like, could have done without that. Yeah, man, now I gotta talk about.
I was just getting used to the normal tiny ones.
Wow, now I gotta talk about goblins for the next 45 years.
And everyone's gonna think I'm a racist. Yep. And I'm saying, no, it's real like, goblins.
No, they're people. No, you don't understand.
It's goblins. I saw goblins in there.
Hell Year Season 2, check it out. Greg and Dana, you guys gotta come back when you're when the new project comes out. That sounds so cool. We just absolutely love talking to you. And yeah, as Henry said, you know, Henry and I and everyone here at Last Podcast, we are big fans of actually doing the things that you say you're going to do, whatever those things might be. So that's really awesome that you guys.
Unless, of course, it's attacking a bunch of people in a public square. Then you should
unless
probably
it's like a mass
just give
shooting.
It a reason.
Then we say, leave that, put that on the back burner. Yeah. That's what we do. We say, put that on the back burner. Don't even, you know, keep it in the old brain. Don't need to have that live and in action. But thank you all so much for coming on.
Oh, man, thank you for having us again. It's always a blast. We look forward to it every time.
Live from your grave.
All right, there it was, our interview with Greg and Dana Newkirk. Hell Year Season 2, check it out. Love them, and I love what they do.
They are very sweet, and I'm obviously a huge fan of Hell Year and 1 and 2, and I like their personalities. I think they're fun as hell. I think that if we're going to have new modern paranormal investigators, this is where it starts. We got to get them out there. We need new John Keels.
I agree. Thank you all so much for giving to our Patreon. Once again, you know, we're all in this together. You're part of the fam if you give to the Patreon.
And remember, we'll say it again. If you are a Patreon member, absolutely nothing changes about your account or your feed or anything during the Spotify change. So y'all just kind of sit there.
You sit or stand or do whatever you do there.
Be here, and we'll just keep doing the same old fucking dog and pony show. We got what's so nice about the Spotify deal is that we're getting an actual pony.
Really? I didn't even know that. Look at that. Very exciting.
We're all plugged in, man. We know what's going on.
A friend for all of our dogs. All right, everyone. Thank you all so much for listening. Hail yourselves.
Hail Satan.
Let's do a Magoostalations.
Hey, thank you for your money.
Thank you. Be careful out there. Don't piss off any cursed dolls.
Not tonight.
Not ever.